Om Agyanatime Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I'll continue the narration about the pastimes of Sri Madhvacharya Bhagavat Pad. It is most appropriate to do so here in Udupi. Especially as I believe most of you are not aware of many of these pastimes. And it's also appropriate to do so on the day in which you have all kindly come here to join me in worshipping Sri Vyasadeva. We worship Vyasadeva by glorifying our acharyas. It's also very appropriate for me, who will be accepting puja from all of you, by recalling the activities of Sri Madhvacharya to help me to keep in perspective who are the acharyas and who am I. Attempting to be their humble servant. The actual great personalities, they kindly accept us into their fold, but they are great. And if there's any quality that I may have, then it's only because, as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jogata bichare kichu nahi pai tomara karuna shah. If I'm actually examined, of course you'll be examining me in a biased way, but if we are actually to examine me in an objective way, then what will you find? Nothing. Kichu nahi. But is there something? If there's something, that's all the mercy of Hari, Guru and Vaishnava, especially Guru, that mercy comes through the Guru. So let us, or I will continue, recounting briefly some of the pastimes of Sri Madhvacharya. Only some of them are recalled, but at every moment while he was in this world, he was Krishna Bhakti Nite Dite Dare Mahashakti. Of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it said they were very powerful in receiving and giving Krishna Bhakti. So that is what he was doing at every moment, a standard of bhakti which we can only bow down to in remembrance of. So every moment of his existence is surcharged with Krishna consciousness. And to fully describe that is not possible. But just a few glimpses here. Last night, or yesterday evening, I recounted some of those pastimes up to the stage of Sri Madhvacharya accepting sannyas at a young age, somewhere between the age of 10 and 12, it doesn't seem to be very clear, from Sri Achyuta Preeksha, who had been inducted into Mayavad and Sri Purnapragya Tirtha, the sannyas name he received. Madhvacharya was known as Purnapragya Tirtha, his sannyas name. And practically, although he accepted sannyas from Achyuta Pariksha, he became the instructor. And Achyuta Pariksha became fit to be, we could say, fit to be seen by Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Achyuta Pariksha treated Madhva with vatsalya, parental, just like parental affection, because Madhva, a young boy, naturally an elderly person will treat a young boy with affection. Although, as Sri Madhvacharya had also amply demonstrated, he was quite capable of looking after himself, of protecting himself from demons, severe demons. And in fact, he's quite capable of looking after the whole world. But Achyuta Pariksha took care of him, took special care of him among his disciples. Shortly after taking sannyas, the young boy sannyasi, that tradition is going on to the present time here in Udupi, that young boys are offered sannyas. So mothers with young boys, you can go back to where you're going and you can leave your boys here and give them all sannyas. Will you agree? I doubt it. And are they ready? That's also quite doubtful. Special souls are offered sannyas. So this Purna Pragya Tirtha, he, after a few days after accepting sannyas, he asked permission from his guru to take a bath in the Ganga. So Achyuta Pariksha agreed, all right, all right. And then he, after that, he thought, wait a minute, the Ganga is a few thousand, and they didn't say in kilometers those days, but it's not a pond next door. It's a long way to go. He's going to be away for months. So he immediately regretted that I got such a nice disciple and now he's just going away. So he was feeling unhappy, and to alleviate the unhappiness of Sri Achyuta Pariksha, Ganga Devi herself came in the tank, which you can see just as you enter the Krishna Mart in the temple here. You'll see most of the time it's, especially at this season, there's a gate which is locked. It used to be open most of the time, but especially during Ayyappa season, they keep it closed most of the time. But if you go there at 4 o'clock this morning, as we did, you can take bath, or at least sprinkle some drops on your head. That water is Ganga. Ganga came there, so Madhva didn't have to go. Previously, that was known as Ananta Tirtha. Is it? Yeah. But now that tank is known as Madhva Sarova. So Ganga comes there every 12 years. And Madhva was daily bathing there, and so many pure souls have bathed there. So that water is very sacred. If you go early in the morning, you can also take darshan. There's hardly anyone there at that time. And if you go for taking darshan later, well, probably you've all seen it's a long wait, and then you just get a very brief darshan. Actually, even 10 years ago, there were much less people coming. It's like all the holy places in India, there's more and more and more people coming. So, about a month after Sri Madhvacharya accepted sannyas, one great pundit came to Udupi. Pundits, they used to, accomplished pundits, they would travel around like intellectual bullies and defeat everyone and make the local pundits feel ashamed because in their own area they'd be known as pundits, but then someone would come from outside and they'd debate and defeat them. This was a principal part of the culture of Bharatavarsha, was debating of great scholars. So a pundit by the name of Vasudev, he came to Udupi and he challenged, "Who's here? Anyone to speak with?" So Madhva accepted the challenge. So this pundit spoke for 3 days and everyone was very impressed, spoke very well. Everyone applauded, seemed like he spoke very well. Then this young boy came up and completely smashed everything he said. Who was that young boy? Sri Madhvacharya, Bhagavat Pad. Purna Pragya Tirtha. He was inclined much to study Srimad Bhagavatam. And he knew it very well. As a young boy, he would freely quote verses from Bhagavatam. And the Chuta Preksha once asked him, "Well, how is it that you know Bhagavatam so well? You're a young boy and we don't know any that you've studied." Study of Shastra in those days doesn't mean that you pull a book off the shelf, but rather one is instructed in Shastra. That was the system. Swadhyay, or personal study, is also there, but that was reading, we can say. Swadhyay, we can more or less say that means reading or personal study, but that was subordinate to being taught. So this young boy, he had not studied Srimad Bhagavatam. "How do you know it so well?" Achyuta Preksha asked him. And Madhvacharya said, "From previous lives." So like this, Madhvacharya gradually became well known for debating and defeating others. His skill in speaking, his knowledge, became well known. And in those days, if someone has not, even now, to some extent, if people have knowledge in many countries of the world, and especially in India, that is respected. Although nowadays, if people have a PhD from a university, people think, "Oh, that's something very good." If they're a professor. In other words, if they're spoiling their human life by filling up their the space between their ears with all kinds of useless information and are expert in uselessly analyzing that useless information and are expert in uselessly teaching others that useless information, then people think, "Oh, very learned." So it's a praise of the fools by the fools. But previously in India, learning meant knowledge of Shastra. And there's a whole culture of that. So scholars were very much appreciated. In all of society, scholars were the most appreciated, not wrestlers or bodybuilders or fighters. Although Madhvacharya was also good at that, wrestling and fighting. But that was not, or musicians in the modern age, musicians are thought very important people. And Madhvacharya was also expert in that. But scholars, they were most respected. So Madhvacharya, his reputation as a scholar, that grew, and people came to hear from him, crowds of people. And Achyuta Preksha installed Madhvacharya, even though he was a young boy, Achyuta Preksha installed Madhvacharya as his successor. Achyuta Preksha, you could say, he officially retired as the head of the math, and Purna Pragya Tirtha, who has now gained another name, Ananda Tirtha. At that time, he was known as Ananda Tirtha. So I was saying that he became famous for speaking, but his speaking was, not only was he expert in it, but this was something unusual, what he was speaking. Because most of the scholars, and when we're talking about speaking, of course there were various speakers and various scholars, but among scholars, those who discussed Vedanta Darshan, the philosophy of Vedanta, they were considered on the highest level. And there are others, Puranikas, those who recited the Puranas, they weren't considered so on such a high level. People who told stories from Ramayana, that wasn't considered really up to the highest standard. Those who can expound Vedanta, they were considered the best. So Madhva was doing that, but in a manner which no one had ever heard. Because the normal manner of doing that was following the explanations of Shankaracharya that he had given, that Shankaracharya had given in his Sharirika Bhasha, Mayavad. And Madhvacharya, his explanations were totally opposite. He refuted everything that Shankara said and established a philosophy which was absolutely opposed to Mayavad, that Advaitavad, and Madhvacharya's Dvaitavad, two-ness, not oneness, two-ness. He established difference. Kevaladvaitavad, the Kevaladvaitavad of Shankaracharya attempts to explain that everything is all one. I am me, I'm also you. You are yourself, you're also me. Everything is all one. And especially, I am God, and we're all God. So it's nonsense. Everyone can understand that. That I am not you, you are not me. I am not God. Well, everyone doesn't understand it because they're in Maya. And it's very attractive to people to hear that actually I'm God. That's called Maya. So, Madhvacharya opposed this. He pointed out there are real differences. In this world we see differences. Everything's different from everything else. But Shankaracharya wanted to establish that the difference is illusory. There's no actual difference. Those who are sitting at the back can come, sit up, as it's not very appropriate to sit above the speaker. You won't learn anything, because knowledge goes down like water. This is a modern arrangement, an auditorium. Everyone sits above the speaker. But in cultured society, everyone sits below the speaker. Or even if you do superficially learn, it won't help you. So Madhvacharya established that the differences are real. There are five basic kinds of difference. Everything is different from everything else, but the differences can be categorized into five different divisions. There's a difference between Ishvara and Jiva. There's a difference between the Supreme Lord and the living beings. There is real difference between them. There's real difference between Ishvara and Jara, that which is material. Mayavad, they attempt to establish that Ishvara is under Maya. It's a great offense. The Supreme Lord is, or who they posit to be the Supreme Lord, is under Maya. So there is a difference between Jiva also and Jara, between the living being and the non-living matter. There is difference between each Jiva. Each Jiva is separate, between Jiva and Jiva, between Jara and Jara, between various material entities. There is difference also. And there's also another two kinds of difference that every entity has. That is Svagata and Vigata. There's difference between each entity and every other entity. And there's also, even in one entity, there are differences. In other words, if we take my body as one object, there's a difference between my nose and my ear. That difference in Krishna, Angani yasya sakalendriya vrittimanti pashyanti panti kalyanti chirang jaganti. Krishna can eat with his nose. He can hear with his feet. Anyway, Sri Madhvacharya was becoming famous by establishing all these points, and Achyuta Preksha asked him that you're making these points, you're smashing the position of Shankaracharya, you should write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, commit it. What you're saying, committed to writing. So Ananda Tirtha, he went for a tour of South India, and Achyuta Preksha accompanied him. So usually the disciple accompanies the guru, but here he, who is officially the guru, was accompanying his disciple. And Madhva was speaking. Ananda Tirtha was speaking. Yesterday, I said how Madhva was famous for eating, among other things. He had such an appetite that That was, of course we may think, well, that's, it sounds like some kind of greed, but it's not greed, because it's clearly, greed is a human trait, but the amounts he could eat are superhuman. So we can't say it's greed. A person who feels greedy, they eat more and more and more, and then they can't digest it. But Madhva did digest everything. Once on this tour of South India, he'd just been taken a huge meal. He would eat huge amounts. When someone came with 200 huge bananas, each over 1 foot long and thick and fat like a man's arm, 200 of them, and requested, please honor this. So Madhva did. He ate 200 massive bananas just right, exactly after a massive meal. So someone who was amazed at this, he said, well, how can you eat so much? And Sri Madhvacharya explained that within my stomach there is a fire the size of a thumb, but it's as powerful as the fire at the time of universal devastation. So it can digest the whole universe. What to speak of a few bananas? That's the implication. While traveling and visiting tirthas, that's what sannyasis generally would do when they went traveling. They'd either stay in a mutt or they'd visit tirthas. He came across another sannyasi visiting tirthas. This was Vidyashankara of Sringeri Mutt, which is fairly close to here. It's about 2 hours drive, something like that. So that mutt is Shankara's mutt. So he was the head of the Mayavadis of that region. And naturally, Madhvacharya met with him, debated with him, defeated him. But Mayavadis, even if they're defeated, they generally don't accept that, because they say, well, okay, that's all right, but that's your opinion, and it's all one. So, thanks for the debate, and actually it's all one. So what you said is true, and what I said is true. Everything is true. Everything's untrue. So he didn't... While traveling, they both happened to settle in Rameshwaram for Chaturmas, because sannyasis, they will stay in one, or they traditionally stayed in one place for the 4 months of Chaturmasya. So they were both there, and it's not a very big place, even today. Small place, and two big personalities who didn't like each other at all. So there was the stage was set for conflict. Madhva announced that if I'm defeated in debate, I'll break my danda, which is a very bold thing to say, because breaking one's danda is tantamount to renouncing sannyas, rejecting one's acharya, and admitting total defeat. So of course, Vidyashankara was unable to do that, and although he was actually defeated in debate, but rather than accepting that, he tried by very low-class tactics to get back at Madhva, and he tried to get the local shopkeepers to stop selling anything to Madhva and his followers. So that would try to put them in difficulty like this, because if the shopkeepers don't sell them anything, then how are they going to eat? How are they going to do anything without provisions? And Vidyashankara asked blessings from the local brahmanas to defeat Madhva. And they said, sorry, we can't give blessings like that. Just look at him. He's so effulgent. He's obviously undefeatable. And the followers of this Vidyashankar, they would engage in petty theft, just harassing Madhva and his followers, taking things from them. So Madhva, after the Chaturmas, he again traveled, and as a sannyasi travels, those who are preaching and enrolling people in their life, or bringing people to their way of thinking, naturally their followers increase. So Madhva's followers were increasing. He was lecturing in different places. In one place, he mentioned during a lecture that every name in Sri Vishnu Sahasranam has 100 meanings. So some of the local brahmanas, they challenged it. 100 meanings? That's a bit exaggerated, they thought. So they asked Madhva, okay, you 100 meanings? Okay, you explain. If you can find 100 meanings in each name, if you say that, then demonstrate, explain to us. So Madhvacharya started explaining, but his method of explaining was more complex than the brahmanas could understand, because he was establishing meanings based on nuances of Sanskrit derivation that the brahmanas couldn't understand. And after just explaining in a few ways, the brahmanas begged forgiveness and said, please stop. We accept what you say, but we can't understand what you say, but we accept that what you say is on a level superlatively above that we can even begin to comprehend. So 7 years after accepting sannyas, Madhvacharya requested Sri Achyuta Pariksha for permission to go to Badrinath. Nowadays, if you wanted to go from Udupi to Badrinath, you take a train to Delhi, and then probably another train to Haridwar, and then get on a bus or hire a taxi and go up. And if you have your journey well planned, you could get from here to Badrinath in probably less than 4 days, if you really wanted to go quickly. 3 to 4 days. But in those days, we're talking about several months or years. Or actually, pilgrimage to Badri often meant goodbye. People wouldn't come back because it would take such a long time to go there. And it was so difficult to go that often people, they would simply expire on the way or on the way back. It's very dangerous. There's no road as such. So Madhva, he took permission and went. He wanted to meet Sri Vyasadeva, who's residing there even today. He wanted to present to Vyas his Bhagavad Gita commentary for approval. So it's a long story, which we don't have much information of, how he went to Badrika Ashrama and with few followers, and there presented his Bhagavad Gita commentary to the presiding deities, Nara Narayana, who are Krishna and Arjuna, the original speaker and the original hearer of Bhagavad Gita. So he presented his commentary to them, and he observed 48 days of silence, fasting, and Jagaram. Jagaram means staying awake. So for 48 days, he wanted to meet Vyasadeva, but Vyasadeva, although he resides at Badrik Ashram, one can go and see even today the Vyasa Gufa, the cave of Vyas. But to meet him personally is not such an ordinary thing. He doesn't reveal himself. And actually Vyas lives at Uttar Badri, or it's a branch of Badrik Ashram, which is further north than the place which most people visit. So further north means over the mountains. It's not so easy to go. So after 48 days of fasting, of course, you see he's famous for eating, but as Srila Prabhupada said about Bhimsen, who is Madhva, that one can eat great amounts if one can perform great activities like Bhim. Don't just eat like Bhim, then sleep like Kumbhakarna. But one should perform great activities. So Madhva, he can eat and he can fast. So after fasting and observing silence and staying awake, he received direction to go, and he went. He told his disciples, "You stay here, I'm going. Just wait till I come back." So he went. Madhva went by walking over using the mountain, just like people will cross a stream by treading on rocks. So Sri Madhvacharya walked by using the mountain peaks. He walked over the mountain peaks like that. And his one disciple, Satyatirtha, was, despite being told not to go, he attempted to follow anyway because he couldn't bear separation. But after some time it became clear that Satyatirtha was... He couldn't keep up with Madhvacharya. And the evening was falling, and it's very cold in Badrik Ashram throughout the year. So Satyatirtha seemed to be in danger of his life, stranded in the mountains with the evening approaching. But at this point, Sri Madhvacharya turned and gestured to Satyatirtha to go. And then a strong wind lifted up Satyatirtha and brought him back to where the other disciples were waiting. So Madhva came to a place. Vasugosh Prabhu, would you like to come and sit here? He came to a place beyond the ice and the forbidding mountain ranges. He came to a place which was like paradise. And there he met Sri Vyasadeva. And they discussed the Bhagavad Gita commentary of Sri Madhva. And Madhva returned back to where his disciples were. And then he returned to Udupi by a circuitous route, roundabout route. He went, followed the path of the Ganga to Bengal. The path of the Ganga in Bengal goes through Navadvip. This was before the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Sri Navadvip Dham Mahatmya, has described a meeting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Madhvacharya before the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that place. That's controversial. We can, the Madhva Sampradaya, they will not accept that. Anyway, in this way, Madhvacharya, he journeyed down the east coast, approximately, of India. I mean, not exactly that he was walking along the seashore, but he did the coastal route. And in this way, he visited Puri and gradually came down to South India and over to Udupi. I'm leaving many things out. Well, back in Udupi, Madhva continued to instruct his disciples. He would sometimes, early in the morning, he would walk alone before anyone else had risen. He would walk to the beach at Malpe. That's the name of the area where the beach is, close to Udupi. And one day, as he was walking, he composed some verses in praise of Krishna. Those verses are still famous today. At that time, suddenly a great storm arose in the sea. And in the half light, Sri Madhvacharya could see that there is a ship at sea which is in trouble due to the storm. And Madhvacharya, his uttariya, his top piece, he tied that to his danda and waved it and breathed in deeply, and the ship was sucked out of the difficult area and the storm ceased. So in this way, the ship was saved. The captain was very grateful. It was a merchant ship. It was filled with valuable goods. And he asked Madhva that, "You, out of gratefulness, I'd like to offer you something. Will you please accept something from our goods?" So Madhva asked that where had they come from, and one of the places that they were coming from was Dwaraka. So Gopi Chandan, which we use for marking tilak, that in our sampradaya we use this, in Madhva sampradaya also. So the Madhvacharya asked, "And you have Gopi Chandan?" He saw what's there. That was being used as ballast, not part of the regular goods. Ballast means in the bottom of a ship you have to put some heavy weight so that it sits in the water and doesn't keel over. So huge lumps of Gopi Chandan were there, and Madhva said, "I'll take that big lump of Gopi Chandan. That's all you want, is that's just some rocks which we're keeping to keep the boat in the water properly." So, "Yeah, I want that." So the captain said to his men, "Okay, lift it out." They couldn't do it. Somehow they got it in there, but the sailors, who are all big, strong men, between them they couldn't get it out. So Madhva lifted it out by himself. He often did that kind of thing, showing his superhuman strength. So Madhva lifted that out, and he just walked a short distance when half of the Gopi Chandan, huge rock that he was carrying, broke open to reveal, it fell off and fell down and broke open to reveal a deity of Sri Balaram, which later Madhvacharya arranged to install and worship there. And the temple of Balaram is still there in Malpe. Then he carried the rest of the rock. He had, on the way that morning to the beach, he had composed six verses. And on the way back, he composed six more. And together they're known as Dwadasha Stotram, prayers to Krishna. When he got back, when he reached Udupi, he dunked that huge rock, which others couldn't even imagine carrying, even though it was only half the size that it was before. He soaked it in the Ananta Tirtha, which was now known as the Madhva Sarova. And when the Gopi Chandan dissolved, then a beautiful deity of Krishna was revealed. And that is the deity who is being worshipped to this day in the mutt, which is established just in front of the Madhva Sarova. This deity of Krishna came from Dwaraka and had been worshipped since the time of Krishna's presence. What had happened that Devaki, who was accompanying, or she lived with Krishna in Dwaraka, and she once expressed to Krishna, Dwarakadhish, that I'm your mother, but I never saw your childhood pastimes. By circumstance, I wasn't able to do that, so you please show your childhood pastimes to me. So Krishna did so, and he also, Rukmini, about that time, she also expressed a desire to Krishna that I'm serving you as a wife, but I've heard about your wonderful childhood pastimes, and I'd like to serve you in that form also. So Krishna sent Vishvakarma, the architect, engineer, craftsman of the demigods, he was the city planner for Dwaraka. He sent Vishvakarma to bring from the Gandaki River two large shilas. The Gandaki River is where Shalagram shilas come from. So Vishvakarma brought two large shilas, of which two sets of deities of Krishna and Balaram were fashioned. And those deities were taken to Vrindavan for Mother Yashoda to check. Is this right? Yes, it's right, she said. And one set of Krishna Balaram deities was given to Rukmini Devi to serve, and the other to Devaki. And the smaller ones became lost in time, and the larger ones, with the end of Krishna's pastimes, we read in Srimad Bhagavatam how Arjuna brought the queens from Dwaraka after Krishna had left this world, and at that time he buried the larger deities of Krishna and Balaram, who had remained there for some 4,000 years until they were dug up and along with the rock that was used for ballast and came here to Udupi. So obviously this is Krishna's own desire to come here and be worshipped by Madhvacharya and his followers in the Madhva Sampradaya. So Madhva at that time was already well known, and he could have, in establishing a temple for Bal Gopal, this deity, he could have built a huge opulent temple. Those of you who are coming from Tamil Nadu, you're probably surprised to see such a small temple. How can it be important? Because in Tamil Nadu, there are so many big temples that many of them, they're not even considered very important, although they're many temples which are 20, 30 times the size of the Krishna Mart here, they're not considered very important compared to others. So Madhvacharya chose not to just to have a simple structure, not very important, because this Udupi, it was already the place of the Chandra, Moleshwar and Ananteshwar deities. So Madhvacharya chose to have a simple structure. And even that Gopuram, which is there, which is very small compared to many temples in Tamil Nadu, that's new, that's just come up in the... That Gopuram wasn't there. So Madhva himself, he started to worship Krishna all day. That's what he did. That's what pujaris do, or archakas. They all day they're with the deity, and he was serving Krishna all day from morning till night. And that's what the Paryai Swamis do up to the present day. At the present time, that the present Paryai Swami circumstantially isn't doing that. It's Lakshmi Varatirtha of Shiriramath who's doing it. That's for the first time in history, probably. But after some time, Madhva, he turned the responsibility for worship over to his sannyas disciples and gave them the eight principal mutts with eight sannyasi leaders. They would take over the worship of the deity for, I believe at first it was what, 8 years? Do you know? That was the period? No. Oh, it's 2 months. They would say, right. Sorry, it's round the other way. They didn't decrease it. They increased it. But then later, during the time of, who is that? Vadira or Jayatirtha? Vadiraja. He altered the system so that just as Sri Madhvacharya had turned over the responsibility to his sannyasi disciples so that he could teach and preach, be free to do that. So all the system in the beginning was that the eight sannyasis, they'd take turns of 2 months each to worship the deity. And they'd be assisted by the others, so they'd all be busy with that. But the system changed to that they have a paryai, which means a turn. They each have a turn of 2 years doing that. So having turned over the archana, or the worship of the deity, to certain sannyasis, Madhva again set out for Badrinath. For anyone to do a visit to Badrinath once in a lifetime is an amazing achievement. But to do it twice, that's practically unheard of. I mean, you had to be very physically strong even to be able to go and to survive, to walk up such a long way with no... Where do you get food on the way up on the mountains? You may have to fast for some days. It's very dangerous. There's tigers and lions and bears, and there's no proper path. It's a rough, and you fall off the edge, and the weather is very dangerous there also. So Madhva went with 50 sannyasis and other followers, but usually a group traveling like this, even of sannyasis, they'll take some paid servants to carry the bearers. There was a whole class in India previously called bearers. In the English gave that name, bearers. And they would just carry things when people went from one place to another. But they didn't take any paid servants. They did everything themselves. Keeps everything very simple. So when they came to the Ganga, there's a lot of adventures, no doubt, between Udupi and the Ganga. It's a long way. They had to cross the Ganga, but no boatman would take them across, because on this side, the southern side, there was a Hindu kingdom, and on the other side was a Muslim kingdom. And the Muslim king on that side had a habit that whenever any Hindus would cross over to that side, he'd kill them. So Hindus were not very fond of crossing over. And if they were, well, That would be the last time. So, Madhva and his party, they couldn't get any boatman to take them across. Not surprisingly. I don't know what the boatmen were doing, but they were, whatever they were doing, they weren't going across the Ganga. Maybe they were going down the Ganga or up the Ganga, but not across it. So, Madhva told them, okay, we'll make a human chain here. One disciple held his cloth, and then another disciple held the cloth of the next disciple, and like this, they all made a human chain. All right, everyone ready? And then Madhva walked over, and they all walked over with him. And the Muslim king heard about this. He came to see what's going on. I heard there's some sannyasi who wants to cross over. So he came to see, and he fainted to see that. And he woke up and he fainted again, and to see them fainting, walking over the Ganga. So he was very satisfied with Madhva that he was so bold, and he didn't attempt to kill such people who obviously had supernatural power. But he wanted to offer kingdom and goods to Madhva, but Madhva wasn't interested. And he traveled on. Was it the Ganga? Maybe it wasn't the Ganga. Anyway. Then in Bhadrika Ashram, Vyasadeva told Sri Madhvacharya to make a commentary on Mahabharata. So that was, it's actually, of course that may sound, oh, all right, but he may think, not very important, but these are very important. Explaining it, what is Mahabharata. Up to the present day, there are so many misconceptions and misunderstandings about Mahabharata and all Shastras. So the Acharyas have to explain this. While after coming back from Bhadrika Ashram, Madhva was traveling with his disciples in various places in North India, visiting holy places. When they came to Kurukshetra, Madhva at one point said to his disciples, "Dig here." So they dug and they dug and they dug and they made a big hole. They're wondering what it's all about, and then they came across a huge metal club. It was Bhima's club. Who would know where that is? Bhima would know. Madhva is Bhima. So no one, all the men together couldn't even slightly lift it up. And Madhva picked it up, twirled it around, and put it back and said, "Okay, cover it up again." At one place, the local king was excavating a tank, and he wanted Madhva and his party, he wanted to force them to help. That was his system. He'd catch travelers and say, "Hey, you have to dig this much, only then you can go on." So Madhva said, "Well, we don't know how to do that, so could you show us how to do it?" And the king himself, Madhva, obliged him to start digging. And he made the king dig all the part that was apportioned to their party, then they went on. There are many incidents described how one tiger attacked Satyatirtha, and Madhvacharya, he just came and got a hold of the tiger's mouth and pulled it, opened it and released Satyatirtha, and then chased off the tiger. So on different occasions they were attacked by dacoits, and on one occasion the whole party just vanished. On another occasion they were coming to a gang of dacoits were coming to attack Madhva and his party. And they saw there's no one there. They all turned into huge stones. Then they turned back again to humans, and the gang of dacoits thought, well, we better not attack these. They might turn us into stones and not turn us back again. They may have thought that. That's my own added commentary. In Gomantak, which is now known as Goa, when Madhva was there, he was offered more bananas than he had in that previous pastime, and a huge amount of bananas. So he did this more than once. He was becoming famous as for eating. Back in Udupi, Madhva went on teaching his disciples. He taught them not only Shastra, but how to sing. Madhva means sweet, so he would sing very sweetly. And he composed many prayers to Krishna. And he taught his disciples how to sing and how to dance nicely for Krishna. He also taught them wrestling. Srila Prabhupada also said the brahmacharis, they can wrestle. And it doesn't seem to have become very popular, but it's an approved sport for brahmacharis. Of course, we should know how to do it so we don't hurt each other, but it seems to be an approved sport for keeping good health. Some of his sannyasis, at one time, Madhva heard them boasting about who's the strongest, and they were all healthy people. They were not like many of our ISKCON sannyasis, unhealthy sannyasis, but physically very healthy. So one time Madhva heard them all boasting about who's the strongest, and Madhva said, who's the strongest? Well, anyone want to take me on? And he defeated them all. No one, even very easily, Madhva could defeat everyone. At one time on his travels, there was a man who was famous all over the area as a bully. He was the strongest man. No one could challenge him. So he challenged Madhva. Madhva said, well, before we fight, just do one thing. Just pick up my toe from the floor. He couldn't do it. Another time, there were some strong men, and Madhva challenged them that, you're so strong? Okay, I'm going to sing Sankirtan. See if you can stop me, if you can choke me. They couldn't do so. They couldn't, even his, with him, then attempting to choke him, but they couldn't alter even the sound of his voice even slightly. Back in Udupi, the next Shankaracharya of Sringeri, after the passing away of Vidyashankara, his name was Padmatirtha, but he wasn't so learned. But there was another sannyasi there, Advaitavadi sannyasi, who was known as Pundarika Puri, who was very learned. But his prowess was diminished in the presence of Madhva. So the Sringeri mud people, they were very envious, and they tried by various means, resorting to tantrism, to try to kill Madhva. But they couldn't, even slightly. They tried to ostracize brahmanas who followed him. There's a very, those who accepted Madhva's teachings, they were ostracized from society. These are very serious things. That means that no one will talk to them, cooperate with them. They can't buy food. They're not allowed to. They can't go to the well to get the water. They can't do anything. They're stopped from all activity. They're practically, to ostracize someone is practically they can join the Chandal community, which doesn't live in the village, or they can go to the jungle. It's almost like a social death sentence on them. So the Sringeri Mutt, who at that time in that whole area, they had control over all the brahmanas, and then all of a sudden there was this new philosophy coming up, and one by one all the brahmanas were giving up their Advaita Vada and their allegiance to Sringeri Mata, and not only giving up their allegiance, but totally rejecting as completely bogus the philosophy and the teachings and everything, and they would be of the Sringeri Mata, and becoming devotees. So they became very envious, and they attempted to, in this way, diminish the influence of Sri Madhvacharya, but they were unsuccessful in doing so. In one time, this Pundarik Puri, he came to Udupi and challenged Madhva to debate. But after the first day, seeing that he was unable to, he left, his whole party left overnight. But they didn't just leave, they stole all of Madhva's library, which had been collected over many years. So Madhva followed them, and one king, Jai Singh, of one place presently in Kerala, he vowed to Madhva that he would get that back from them. So he chased this party of brahmanas who were so envious of Madhvacharya that they stole all his books. So when the king caught up with them, he gave them a choice. You give back you turn those books over to me within 5 minutes, or I'll kill you all. He was so angry with them. Trivikram Pandit, who wrote whose son, Narayan Pandit, Acharya, he compiled this Sri Madhva Vijay, in which we get this biographical information. He was another converted Mayavadi who would praise. He would compose so many prayers in praise of Madhvacharya. And at one point Madhva told him, "Well, that's nice that you're praising me, but actually you should praise the Supreme Lord also, not just me." So Trivikram Pandit composed the Sri Nrisingha Nakha Stuti, prayers in glorification of Nrisingadeva, which is famous to this day. One time, Trivikram Pandit, I was saying that Madhva, he turned over the deity worship, but when he was in Udupi, he would often perform that himself. And sometimes he would go inside the temple alone and wouldn't come out for a long time. One time, Madhva was inside the temple for a very long time and hadn't come out, and Trivikram Pandit entered to see what he was doing, and he beheld that Madhva was worshipping Krishna, Madhva was worshipping Vyas, Bhima was there worshipping Krishna, and Hanuman was worshipping Lord Ram. At the Ananteshwara temple, Madhva, he would regularly discourse on Shastra in the courtyard of the Ananteshwara temple. And one time when he passed, while he was doing so, he was about 80 years old, while discoursing on his favorite Upanishad, the one he liked to discourse on most of all, Aitareya Upanishad, Sri Madhvacharya apparently passed away from this world. Although his followers say that he's still present there at that place even today. So you can go and offer respects there to Sri Madhvacharya at the Ananteshwara temple after offering obeisances to the deity. If you just go around to the left for parikrama of the deities, there's just around the corner, there, inside an alcove, there's a deity of Madhvacharya. and you can offer obeisances there.
So, how are we doing for time?
It's 9:47. I'm supposed to finish at 10 o'clock, so I won't say much more now. We're all very fortunate to come to this holy place. I've been coming here once or twice a year, almost every year, for about 15 years. I personally, among the many holy places I have visited, I personally like to come here very much. I feel much inspiration in Krishna consciousness coming here. So you also take blessings from Sri Madhvacharya, having come here to follow so tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushang param, to follow with such an intense mood to worship Krishna with such intensity as Madhvacharya did. If we can get even a slight level of the intensity that he had, our lives will be successful in all respects. Srila Prabhupada is the modern representative of Sri Madhvacharya. As Madhvacharya traveled widely and preached the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially attacked and defeated Mayavad, so did Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada did that all over the world, and we're very grateful to him, Srila Prabhupada, for having introduced us to Sri Madhvacharya and the whole spiritual world, all the great personalities of the spiritual world. I'll take this opportunity to thank my God brothers and one God sister who have come here to bless all the devotees. You're very fortunate to have their association. They're very kindly helping others in Krishna consciousness. They've been doing so all their lives, pretty much. Basu Ghosh Prabhu, those of you who have come from Gujarat know him very well. He's been living there most of his life. And practically I'm a member of his family, practically, to his children. They've grown up seeing me, especially shortly after I took sannyas. I was all ready to go traveling, preaching. I did for some time, but then my health broke down. And for 1.5 years, I was doing nothing, practically, in ISKCON Baroda, and resting. And Basu Ghosh Prabhu kindly hosted me during that period. So we're really God brothers. I mean, it's like that, isn't it? It's almost like a family relationship. Haripada Prabhu, I don't personally know so well, but we have all of eternity from now on by the grace of Srila Prabhupada to get to know each other. Although Haripada Prabhu is here with his good wife, Falini Devi Dasi, who we're definitely one in spirit, because you all know those who have my disciples, means almost all of you. I hope you know that I'm one of the things I emphasize is traditional family roles in Krishna consciousness. So that's something that Haripada Prabhu and his good wife do, both by practice and precept. So we're together on this. So those Grihastha devotees can... He's personally taking interest in how to help Grihastha devotees. It's what was previously just a normal thing that people get married and they live together, and those who are devotees, they chant Hare Krishna. It's just like a normal thing which you don't even think about. You don't like make a strategy or a plan about how you're going to brush your teeth in the morning. It's just, well, you brush your teeth, that's all. But for, it used to be like that, more or less, for most people. You get married and you live, and that's it. But nowadays, for people to live in family life has become extraordinarily complicated. And it seems to be a very difficult thing, even among our devotees, even to get married in the first place. So they're kindly offering their guidance in this regard, which is a very important service, which they can do much better than me. I can only give some general idea, but they can give more specific advice than I can. So thank you very much to all of you for coming. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada ki.